Hello and welcome to The Game Is About Glory. I'm your host, Steph, and joining me are Ram and Milo. Hello, chaps.
Hey, Steph.
Yeah, good. There's a pip in our voices, right? It's a new season, new manager, new creative midfielder, new defenders, new keeper, and storming new away shirt, which none of you will be surprised to know is on its way to me. It's all about the new and the path ahead, isn't it? And yes, optimism reigns supreme here. Yes, it's all positives today and from this point on. Look, it started at Brentford in the 2 p.m. match. I mean, that's why I'm saying all this. We arrived at an exciting 2-2 draw. There are plenty of talking points. So without further ado, without our good old friend Ado, getting on without him, let's get on the front foot and get right into it, shall we? I mean, if ever there was a moment, Milo, for your lead question, which is always the lead question every pod, for us to dive into it. I mean, yeah, Milo puts in the notes. This is a consistent anchor of the pod, and it's a really good one. And under the last couple of managers, it's just been like, oh, God. But what did you think of the team selection? Crikey. There's a lot to break apart there. So, chaps, kick it off.
Should I kick off? It's pretty bold in the...
Well, don't kick off. I don't want to fight. Just talk about the team selection.
Yeah, no, it's pretty bold. So, four Premier League debutants for us. And we've got a question later on about how they did. But, you know, in terms of kind of formation, it's, you know, exactly the same as we've seen all the pre-season. 4-3-3, which becomes a 2-3-5 in attack and a 4-4-2 in defence. And, you know, the players, again, as we've been saying over the last few weeks, seem to have adapted quite quickly to the formation and the tactics. And, you know, particularly considering, you know, we lost a couple of competitive games from pre-season. I think from that point of view, it's pretty impressive where we are in terms of our development. And, you know, the opposition today were a real test for us because, you know, they're a team that play on the break. They sit back in numbers. They attack, you know, quick, you know, fast on the break. They're not scared of a long ball in behind and chase onto. They've got a fast, you know, front line. And all of those are things that are going to, you know, cause problems for us because we push very, very high up and, you know, kind of requires us to, to chase back and defend, you know, chasing back. And that's been a struggle for us in pre-season. That's the bit that we've been struggling to adapt to. So they were a real test for us. You know, that Brentford are a decent side. They beat City twice last season, who are, you know, a team stylistically who aren't dissimilar to what Ange's trying to do with us. So it was a really good test for us. A tough opening fixture, which I think probably a lot of people will take lightly because it's little old Brentford. But no, they're a good team. It was a good test and it's a good game to measure us by.
Yeah, I think so. I thought the team selection, I thought was, you know, as we mentioned, it was four league debuts, which is pretty bold, considering what we are used to, actually, in, you know, from the last few years. But I thought we looked like a nicely balanced team on paper. So when I saw the team, I was like, yeah, that makes total sense. I thought that, you know, there was players that we've got on the bench that could have staked a claim to start as well, which is a beautiful thing. Because how long has it been since we've been able to say, oh, yeah, we've got really good options on the bench. As Milo said, I felt really positive overall about our play. I thought, you know, we did weather an early storm, which I think, you know, that was clever by Brentford, just come at us right from the start, you know, new manager, debutants in the team. But generally, we were in control. And I think some of the defensive frailties we had were expected. It didn't help that Romero, you know, going off early, forced us into a change. But, you know, I thought our midfield was very strong, really strong. And I'm hoping we'll wax lyrical about Bissouma in particular, as we discuss further, because I just thought he was an absolute beast today. Our front three, I thought, were probably our weakest link today. And when I say weakest link, I'm not saying they played badly. I'm just saying that they were our weakest link.
I agree with you. I thought the team selection was bold. I was quite surprised to see Van de Ven thrown into the mix because he's only had two training sessions. And I have to say, I was really impressed with, as you both said, the balance and the shape and just the intent of the side. You know, I think we have more possession today than we had in the last month of the last season.
70%. When was the last time we had 70% possession?
Yeah. And watching these players, you know, in the course of the game, you know, wanting the ball, enjoying having the ball, constantly trying to make things happen, constantly ticking and churning and ticking and churning. And look, I mean, the defending is going to be a little Keystone Cops for a while because that's the nature of the system we have, the reductive nature of what we've had to put up with for years prior and players readjusting. But once they click in, I think it's going to be a really, really solid unit. I mean, I really, well, solid may not be, but we will be fine is my point. At this point, we know where the problems are. It's very easy to work on that and clean them. So I mean, I was impressed.
I don't think there were too many Keystone Cop moments today. And I think, you know, in terms of kind of players readjusting, I mean, you know, three of that back five are brand new. So there's probably not, you know, hopefully there's not too much of that. So, you know, I think...
I should clarify readjustment just before you carry on. When I say readjustment, I sort of was referring to, you know, players who have been at the club for a few seasons readjusting to the fact that the manager wants them to have the ball and play with it as opposed to play more without it. So that's kind of what I meant. But you're right with regards to the three. Yeah, it's brand new.
I mean, defence full stop. You know, there's enough new people in there that hopefully that would, you know, force the change anyway. But, you know, it's certainly going to be something to watch over the next few weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the system we play, it's going to make things interesting because Brentford definitely had a plan. They definitely knew that, you know, we're pretty narrow when we're forward. The way those fullbacks play, there are going to be spaces right in behind. And so if you hit those areas, it's you know, we're going to have trouble. I mean, I think teams will do that to us. We'll adjust.
I mean, Brentford do that every week. That's their tactic. They're a long ball team. Yeah. You know, they're a team that play on the break. I mean, I think we also probably need to bear that in mind when we talk about possession stats today. I mean, we will have a lot of the ball this season, but Brentford didn't want the ball. You know, they had seven, eight men back and were looking to the break. So, yeah.
But I think in general, we would agree that, you know, this is a side that is being, we all know this. I mean, I think we're just referring generally. It was a pleasure to see us want the ball.
Yeah, we wouldn't have had 70% possession last season against this Brentford team, you know. And I think I didn't want to tempt fate in our chat earlier, but about 15, 20 minutes in, I did actually want to text in and say, lads, I think we're going to be okay.
No, I think so I was as well. Like,
yeah, and you know, I thought we were,
But to posit your previous point, posit is a word I've started to use a lot recently. I quite like it. I don't know, is it a poncy word, posit, or is it an accurate one? I'd like to posit this point.
I
posit this point to both of you off the back of the point that you posited, which was you were talking about the front three, and I think it's very important. I think it's a good place to go before we get into the debuts. I agree. I thought they had the toughest time. How much of that is due to the fact that everyone is so used to us, our front line being serviced and indeed indulged by another player? I mean, let's not duck it. Yeah. I mean, by Kane. Yeah. How much of that is just adjustment versus playing against a team that have two lines really, really deep and challenge you to pick the lock? Which, I mean, it made me think of a lot of the Pochettino games in, you know, around 2017, 2018, where we'd come across these teams that just line up like that, and we just have to kind of find a way through. And I don't remember any of the forwards doing particularly well in those games. So was it because of that, or was it because of getting used to stuff?
Well, I think it could be that if you look at the other areas of the pitch, we had new players and debutants, or we had a player like Bissouma who didn't feature much last season, whereas the front three that we're playing today have been kind of featured in the last few seasons for us, you know, or Richarlison at least last season. So it could just be that there was less, should I say, new energy in that part of the pitch where they, you know, where they maybe were, they are still more used to what we were serving up before. Whereas, you know, behind them was all this new energy that was coming in that was fully sort of, you know, fully sold in on Ange. Not that they're not, but I think, yeah, you know, they're kind of more senior players up the front there, and they might have just struggled a bit. But I take your point, Steph. I think there probably was a part of them which is, you know, we had a very, very important talismanic player up front for us, which we don't have anymore, and that will have an effect.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two reasons. I think one's down to Brentford, one's down to us or the selection. And Brentford denied us any space. Their midfield sat very tight on the defence, so there wasn't really the pockets for their number eights to operate in. And you know, Richarlison didn't have a lot of space to operate in at all. And then the other one is, you know, the point I've made a couple of times in that our wide players want to cut inside, and there was the lack of there wasn't really much of us getting in behind them. The wide players, Son and Deki, getting in behind them and playing balls, behind the defence. And I think that's going to cause us problems until we find a solution to that, because it makes it easy to defend against if you always know where they're going to go and we're not stretching teams. So, you know, I think that's, there is an issue around the wide players not suiting the system.
And I think that's also something that's going to be very important for whoever is our number nine. And I think it's something that the previous number nine, who obviously wore number 10, was so good at doing, is that he was good at dropping it, dropping off and like getting, you know, helping to open space up. Whereas I think we're still getting used to players that maybe don't have quite the sharpness of movement or his movement was exceptional. And I mean, you're gonna pay for that for a little while until they find their own way.
I mean, I really don't think that would have helped today, because then you lose the focal point, and that's, you know, what so I think, you know, obviously, yeah, he's great on the ball. He can, you know, but if we look at kind of issues in that performance, I think probably the main difference is that, you know, there's a snapshot that Richarlison had that probably, you know, Kane's better at those than Richarlison and stuff like that. You know, if you're going to pick one of the two to take one shot, then, you know, it's obvious who you're going to pick.
Well, yeah, I'm not turning into a discussion of who would have been better than him. I'm just saying, I actually thought he did pretty well today. And I think that he's going to be the one that everyone points the finger at. But actually, I was more disappointed in the way that Sonny, and especially in the first half, Deke played. Second half, I thought he was much better. And Sonny came into a bit more in the second half too. But I think, yeah, there's just, I think it's the toughest for them, because they are used to a certain click and rhythm, and they've got to find it. And more than ever, your forwards need to find that rhythm. And so, you know, I thought Richarlison was getting into positions despite the tight marking, which was encouraging.
But you've also got to bear in mind that the role he's being asked to play is almost a sacrificial role for the team.
Yes.
You know, I've forgotten the name of the striker at Celtic that Ange had last year. He had very few touches of the ball. I think the least across the Scottish Premier League last season. But he was it was effective for the team. And I think this is one of the things as fans, we're going to struggle to readjust with, because Richarlison isn't being asked to be involved in everything. He's being asked to, you know, create space and force a team back. So, you know, it's a selfless role. And I think I agree with you. I think he did all right. I think he did okay.
Yeah.
I think probably the issue we've got is, and, you know, we'll go on and talk about the transfer window later on. You know what? And, you know, I think, Ram, you're right when you talked about the bench being stronger, but we were short of an option to replace Richarlison. And I think, you know, there's still a bit of, you know, balancing to do on the squad that would give us more options and help us.
Mm. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, look, I think we're all in agreement that Richarlison was fine. He is going to suffer for a fair few games with a direct comparison to a player that is incomparable. I mean, the player he's in replacing is essentially incomparable and irreplaceable. So it's a doomed comparison to start with, and somewhat of an ignorant one, actually. But I am interested to see how Sonny and Deke get used to this new way of doing it. It is new for them. And, you know, we'll see how it unfolds. Let's go to these debutants. Van de Ven, Udogi, Madison and Vicario. I think it's pretty straightforward, chaps. Go through your thoughts.
I thought they all did really well. I thought Van de Ven, you know, obviously deflected their second goal in, which, you know, isn't ideal. But otherwise than that, I thought he looked very composed, considering, you know, how little time he's had in training. And then, you know, 13 minutes in, had a change of partner. Presumably he hasn't had any time or very little time on the training ground with Sanchez alongside him. You know, I thought he was, you know, maybe some nervy moments early on, but he grew into the game and grew in confidence as he went on. And, you know, if you'd shown me that blind from, I don't know, half an hour into the game onwards and told me that he'd been in the Premier League for 5 years, I probably would have believed you.
Yeah. That's
go on. Sorry. Go on, Ram. Sorry.
No, I was just agreeing with you. I said, you know, I wrote in my notes, he just looked really comfortable already, despite it being his league debut. I was really impressed with him. I think his movement and his pace is going to be so valuable to the system. And he really did slot in nicely. He was very commanding. He was very communicative. I'm in total agreement.
High ceiling. You can see it. If he can come into the Premiership like that after two training sessions, and as you quite rightly pointed out, Milo, then end up with a new centre-back partner that he's probably barely done a few rondos with before and have a relatively flawless game. I mean, the own goal was unfortunate. The deflection, I can't. But, you know, I agree. High ceiling. Yeah. Yeah.
And so he was very chatty. So I think noticed when we had set pieces going forwards, he was always talking to Sanchez and the other players about what was going on. I think there's a couple of times we really saw him, you saw the pace there. He's not doing that every time, is he? It's just like sometimes you can just see, right, I need this here, and there's just another gear. And you know, his normal pace is quite fast. He's just got that extra gear that I don't think anyone else on this team's got to that degree. And we saw it in the other direction as well. There's a couple of times where there wasn't an option on. He decided to carry the ball upfield and again could just get past people. And I think as that, you know, hopefully Romero's back and able to play next weekend, they can build that understanding, build that partnership, because I think it's very exciting. It, you know, it's, it looks like the most natural partnership we've had since Toby and Jan, really. And a nice blend. Should we move on to a doggy?
Let's do it like this.
A doggy was excellent. Is everything that we've come to expect from him. Yeah. Again, looks like he's been playing in the league for years, and you know, what a bloody bargain. Already looks like one of the best players in the team.
Yeah, he's not afraid to get stuck in, but he's got a bit of silk to him as well. So it's, you know, so he's got a really nice combination of that, and again, another one who looks born for the system.
There was that bit where he held off. I can't remember who he held off now, but you know, back to him and end up winning the free kick and just outside, you know, our own area. He's not going to struggle with the physical side of the Premier League, is he, at all?
No, he had a couple of moments where he was rolled, but he learns very quickly. I noticed that about him. He learns very quickly and he's extremely sharp. And you can just see he's already what I'm impressed with these new signings is they're all characters and they are all, they all have a, none of them are, I mean, no professional football is passive, but you know, as you said, you know, talking, I mean, he's got presence. He's got such presence. How long since we've had presence like that at left back? I mean, left back, left forward, whatever he is, he's played supremely well.
It's pretty clear that one of the criteria we're looking for when we're scouting players is physicality.
Yes.
But, you know, you look at your doggy, you look at, you know, if you take the players who've come in over the last couple of seasons, or, you know, since Paratici came in, you know, obviously Bissouma, who we will go and talk to, is, you know, just a real handful and, you know, get stuck in, physical, you know, Udogi, Van de Ven, you know, right the way through, if you look at those signings coming in, the players we're identifying, they're all strong, they're all physical, they can all do the nasty stuff as well as the nice stuff.
Yeah, even Solomon's capable of that, you know, he's no pushover.
So. Yeah.
Should we move into Madders? Again, great, just looks like a Spurs player, doesn't he?
And the least punchable face in the Premier League.
I just looked at him and it was hard for me today to remember a time when he wasn't in this side. It felt like that. How strange is that? And again, this is strange to say, it seems like he's got a high ceiling. I mean, the guy's 26 and playing pretty far up in his game, but I think there's much more to come. And it feels like we're going to get him in his peak years and already a very, very capable vice captain as well. I noticed he did some social media after the game, which was quite similar in format to what Harry was doing. And the way he's talking about the club and things. And I was really, really impressed. Wonderful.
You can tell he's really sold on Ange and on the club.
And he's a lot picker.
Yeah.
He picked the lock a few times today, and there are a couple more where you're like, "Ha!" When they've played a few more games together, those passes are going to be on point.
Yeah. He was involved in everything positive we created, and he really owned his space. And I thought, you know, the early booking worried me a bit, but he dealt with that very well, you know, and he was still strong. And I think he might end up being our most important signing, actually. And he has been one of our most important signings for a number of years. And I'm going to call it now. He's going to be a starter for England.
Yeah, it's looking that way. I like that. From most punchable face to man you want to hug the most. Wonderful.
I mean, I think on the kind of social media duties, I mean, that's been evident ever since he came in. He was doing probably the most of anyone on the tour. You know, he's bright, he's eloquent, he comes across well. You know, they're going to use him.
I'm sure there's a little sort of sizzle reel that's sitting on the floor somewhere of all the times that me and you, Ram, are slagging him off. It's got to be there somewhere. Oh, right. Sorry. That was something we weren't going to tell about. Well, as I love to say, the first time I roll it out this season, nothing makes a hypocrite out of us like football. Yeah. And I am happy to be a hypocrite when it comes to James Maddison, because that was one hell of a debut. And by the way, what a free kick.
And finally, Vicario.
Yeah.
I think he had a little bit of a nervy start. I thought he grew into the game. I don't think he was to blame for either goal. And I thought, again, yeah, apart from very early on, I thought his use of the ball was pretty good. He was always available for the defenders to pass back to him. I think you've got to give him a bit of a pass because he hasn't played in front of, you know, behind a settled defence all the way through. And again, you know, one of, you know, the most, you know, probably our best defender came off after 13 minutes. And, yeah, I thought he looked good. And I think, you know, made a couple of good saves. And, you know, can do, it was just better than the two we had last year. You know, he's not, you know, not one of the best keepers in the league, or certainly not yet, but he's an improvement on what we had last year, and you know, it suits the system. So, yeah, you know, I think we've got to give him time to settle and get used to the league and get used to the players he's playing with. But I thought he was pretty promising. I thought he was good. He did all the, you know, all the stuff we need him to do well.
He had, he definitely had like that debut nervous energy that spilt over at times. And mm-hmm. I think I even said in the chat, I think that there's a, that I felt a touch of like banteritis at times, but not, I don't mean that in a horrible way. I mean that
you
as
make
in like,
it sound like, you actually make it sound like a viral.
Yeah.
Or there actually was a skin infection. There, you make it sound like a skin infection. Can I tell you?
Yeah.
Like there Mercer. Make it sound like Mercer or something like that.
I think there might be a few banter moments during the season, but I think the overriding thing is that he had a really good debut. I thought when he came out, you know, that was the thing when he came out. Obviously, I have flashbacks of Hugo coming out and stuff like that. But he got to everything he needed to. He made some really good stops. Couldn't have done anything about either goal. And he would have saved the second goal without a deflection anyway. Yeah. But yeah, I thought he was really solid.
Yeah, I freely admit that I think you've both made excellent points. And I think that if I take my own insecurities about him, which are based, you know, on frivolous observations, if I take them out of the equation and watch the player that played today, you'd have to say, in context, new defence, I mean, a new defence for us and a new defence for the likes of Skippy and Bissouma, let alone a new defence for him, away from home, in the Premier League, never played in the Premier League before, has to face a penalty early on. You know, I, generally speaking, I think you're both right. And I
got
think
a yellow card.
Got a yellow card, for which talk about all this in a minute. I have to say, I think you're both right. And if I'm dialectic about it, you know, you couldn't ask for much more. He's going to give us nervy moments, though. I do feel that. But that's okay. That's the system. Okay. That's how it is. And I'll accept that. Let's look at the ceiling. Let's look at the projected ceiling for him. And let's watch him achieve it. Let's believe. Yeah. And I think we saw enough to believe, right? So,
I think there's two points in that. I think firstly, yeah, having a keeper who comes that far out of their box and comes up and is involved in play, and you know, that is almost prioritized over some of the stuff that was what you wanted in a traditional goalkeeper now.
Yeah.
So obviously that's going to put him in situations where there's going to be you know, the odd mistake, or you know, teams are going to capitalize on that, and we'll see that with, you know, the best keepers right the way across the league. But that, in order to allow us to play out from the back and build play from there, is considered to be an acceptable risk. And I think the other thing actually on him, I think he might just be one of those kind of twitchy players. I don't think it's always nerves. It might be one of those that actually looks like that, because I think he's just a bit jittery and kind of in his movements.
I buy that. Yeah.
His facial expression, he sometimes looks like he looks bewildered times, but he's not. He's perfectly in control of himself. But,
and I think the other thing is, for us, you know, we talked about kind of up the top of the pitch, it's still a bit weird not seeing Hugo there because he's been there so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of hit me in pre-season. It was like, oh, he's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it's just getting used to, you know, a different person there, you know, where you've got new shoes on and they kind of still feel new for a little while afterwards, and you kind of, you're conscious of them, and then after a while you're not conscious of them anymore. And maybe it's just that it's kind of, we're noticing all the differences because there's so much stuff that's new, and so many of the kind of the fixtures of this team just aren't there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, talking about new shoes, not only is he required to be a pair of boots, he's required to be a pair of sneakers, because as you said, he's coming out of the box. He is the first point of distribution. He's also essentially the third centre back in many cases, and that is going to put you just tactically alone in a more vulnerable position than any other goalkeeper we've seen for a long time at Tottenham. So I agree with both of you. In context, I think you have to give him good marks, and you have to, you know, he deserves our trust and faith. That is an absolute given. I posit to you, gentlemen, the performance of the referee today. I think we have to discuss it. I felt that first half was single-handedly one of the worst performances I have seen from a referee in a long time. I thought the penalty was an absolute joke. I mean, which we can break down if we need to, or we can just have our opinions and live with them. And I don't understand what his booking, what was his definition criteria. Of booking?
Yeah.
Criteria, thank you. You pick up the big words, I forget.
The thing is, I think he got the penalty decision correct in real time, but
In real time he did.
Yeah, I think he did. You know, I get that there was contact, but the Brentford player there was contact that was unavoidable, and then his feet were planted on the ground. He had to make himself fall to the floor. It wasn't like a natural I could get a penalty here because I'm already
falling.
Zebedee
in the magic roundabout. It was like he boing. It's like, mate, you're planted. Boing.
Yeah,
it's the Zebedee move.
I think it was a penalty.
Yeah. Well, I knew, as I live and breathe, I knew you'd say that. Why? Why is that a penalty? Explain it to me.
Because he caught him. So I think, you know, it's never going to be given without VAR, but there's contact there. He catches him. And yeah, it's a penalty. It's...
Okay, so I have to ask you this. This is the beginning of a long love affair we'll have for the season, obviously, with VAR, which I enjoy. I enjoy these VAR tussles. Okay, let me ask you, is every contact in the penalty box a penalty? And at what point does contact in the penalty box count for a penalty? How many seconds after that contact can you still go down and claim that contact caused you to go down?
It's irrelevant whether he goes down or not. Some caught his ankle. Yeah, I mean, if you kick someone's ankle, then yeah, of course it's a penalty.
Did he kick his ankle though?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I mean,
not
I think
to
what,
my eyes.
I think no, he definitely caught him.
But he didn't kick his ankle. You make it. I mean, let's for anyone who's not seen the game, you make it sound like he actively kicked his ankle. That's not what happened.
Well, no,
I encourage you all to go and look at what happened and make your own assumptions. So
there's not a huge amount of force there. Of course, there's not, and it's not helped by the fact that Jensen holds his other leg when he hits the ground. But that's all of that is irrelevant because he catches him. I'd agree that without VAR, it's never given, you know, regardless, because the ref isn't going to catch that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, the way the game's played...
Is it a clear and obvious error to you? That was a clear and obvious error?
That's not the decision it's made under. What happened there was a conversation between the VAR ref and the on-field ref. The on-field ref has told the VAR ref what he's seen, and the VAR ref has told him that that's not what happened. And that's why the ref's gone to the screen to look at it. So it's not that it's a clear and obvious error. When the ref has described what he saw and why he gave that decision, the VAR ref has told him that's not what happened, and he needs to go and have a look at it again. And that's why, you know, it was overturned. So it's not one of those clear and obvious error issues.
I think the ref succumbed to the moment. I think if it wasn't clear and obvious to him, he would have said, thanks, VAR, but we're going to carry on.
But no, but that's not what happens there. That's not the protocol. So what happens is the ref, on-field ref describes what he's seen. The VAR ref tells him that's not what happened and suggests he looks at it again. So it's not for the on-field ref at that point to say, oh, no, I'm happy with it, I'll carry on. He has to look at it again.
Was this a first-year ref? I can't remember seeing him before.
No.
Been around before? Okay, I couldn't remember before.
On the other decisions, I think what we're seeing, there's a couple of kind of new directives that are coming this year. So, like, only... There's some funny ones. So in terms of the technical area, only one of the coaching staff's allowed in there at any one time. So you're not allowed to have loads of the coaching staff in there all kind of berating at the same time and stuff like that. And obviously we've got the new directive around added time, which is why we saw 11 minutes at the end of the first half, because they're trying to stop, time wasting and that having impacts on that. And then also there's a directive around kind of mouthing off, which is why Madison got the yellow. I think some of these, I mean, probably not those first two, but that kind of dissent one, I suspect we'll probably see quite a lot of cards given in the first month or so of the season, and then it'll settle down and it'll go back to how it was, a happy medium later in the season. We always get these bits at the beginning of a season where there's a new directive and refs kind of overinterpret them a bit, and it takes a while to settle down. I think there was elements of that in the game today. I was kind of amazed in that second half where one of the Brentford players got, I think it was their first yellow in the second half. You're kind of thinking, we weren't that much dirtier than them. And so that was my take on it.
I thought there was an alarming level of inconsistency, despite the very well articulated points that you made regarding the first half. There was an alarming lack of consistency from the referee. And I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree on the on the VAR. I thought it was a decision made from fear and not made from actually officiating the game that he saw. I think he was scared and he didn't want to get criticised for precisely the sort of discussion we were having about it. Because let's face it, if he hadn't given it, it would have been discussions the other way. But anyway, let's hope there aren't too many more of these decisions. We're going to look at the goals, are we not?
We are indeed. I think we took both goals very well. And I think the Maddison free kick was probably the best free kick we've taken since Ericsson was in the team. He really whipped it in and whipped it right into that kind of the beauty area in the penalties, the penalty area, that area just in front of the goal. And Romero's header was top draw. You know, it almost felt like it was slightly away from him and he kind of just angled himself and brought it back into the goal. Really, really good goal. And there's not much more I can say about Emerson Royale and what I think of him as a player. But that was really Maddison again. Was that an assist actually again for Maddison, or was it just deflected? And so it was really good work from him. And then what a well taken goal! He really nicely driven into that bottom corner.
Great justification for the tactic, isn't it?
Mm.
Just pushing him up and inside there. I mean, what a great justification for it. He's there and he's an extra.
He's relishing
person.
It as well.
I'll give the ref some credit there. I thought he actually did well to. I thought he played the advantage for what was a foul on Maddison at that point. Mm. So I'm not sure if he did, but I'll try to balance that.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, which was good work. Good work on his part. So one in the good books there for him. Well, we talked about the positives, goals. if no one has anything more to add to what you've just said about those goals, Milo, do you want to take the negatives on the goals we conceded?
So, yeah, I mean, we've already talked about kind of the first goal on the penalty. I don't think there's really much more to say on that. And the second one, Royal kind of had a hand in that. He was beaten for pace by Rico Henry, who had him kind of quite a few times. I think Royal really struggled with him. Yeah, the ball's crossed in. Wissa has the shot, and it comes off VDV and past Vicario. And as Ram, as you'd already said, Vicario was going to get it if it didn't get the deflection.
I mean, just before you come in, Ram, one question I have about this goal, because I think it's a problem we're going to have to adjust to. It seems to me that because of the way we're playing and because of that system, Royale is everyone's slightly higher and flatter than they would have been prior, especially Royale, who is usually, he sits slightly deeper in a defensive position. And it seemed like both the covering centre-back and Royale both got caught out a little bit there. I can't blame Sanchez because he's come into a game that he wasn't ever really meant to be part of, and Emerson's learning a role. So it just seems like, it felt to me that was why Royale kept on getting done, was because he's just got to learn how that position works. And this covering defender's going to have to learn as well. It's a learning curve.
I don't think it's that with Royale. I think it's just done for pace. I think Rico Henry is just faster than him and he couldn't keep up with him. Henry out-muscles him, doesn't he, outside the area. But, I thought Royal didn't have a very good game today. He took his goal well, but I thought there's quite a few times where he had a sloppy first touch and it kind of caused problems for us in midfield. So it's kind of him as a midfielder and him involved in kind of attacking, I think, was a bit of a problem. And
it's an adjustment for him.
Well, I just don't think he's got the skill set for it. There was one just before then, just after Sanchez came on, where Royal kind of lost possession through, poor touch, lost possession, and Sanchez had to do a recovery tackle in the box in order to stop a chance. I just thought there was a few times where, his passing was off, his first touch was off, and it slows down play. And I suspect over time that he'll lose his place in the team because of it. I just think he's not going to be able to develop that. And I think what we lose attacking with him in the side, I think, will probably be more important than his better defensive qualities than Porro. And I think what Ryle's best at defensively aren't as useful in a team with a high line and playing like this. I suspect that over the next kind of 6 months, 6 weeks, he'll probably lose his place.
Wow, I disagree, but Ram, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about.
That's what we said about him last season, and he proved himself.
Well, he did lose his place.
But he came back with a vengeance. So I do get what you're saying, Milo, and I think what you said just then is actually correct. Like his defense, the things he's really good at defensively aren't necessarily what work in this system.
That's why he got caught, I think, today. I think he's just adjusting to that. He's that much further inside and higher than he would.
He's adjusting to another newish position within his position. But I do think he can. I do think he can adapt. I think he still has a lot to offer to this team. And I thought, you know, obviously like today he took his goal really well, and I think he was involved, and I think he wants to be involved. And I think I really feel like, you know, like he kind of, the way he came back last season, I don't see why he couldn't do that again.
I'm not saying that he won't be a useful squad member. I'm not saying that he, you know, there won't be games that he's better suited for. I think defensively he's best defending, kind of deep facing upfield, and he won't do very much of that in this system. And you know, his first touch and his passing, you know, aren't as good as Porro's. And I think, in, you know, that kind of midfield element of the role, he's not very well suited to. And I don't think you can train that into him. It's just that's not within his locker.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting battle between the two of them. And it somewhat brings us into how are we adjusting to Ange Ball, because essentially this is one of the prime questions, because you do have a player like Porro who is undoubtedly suited more to Ange Ball going forward, but who is possibly not quite as sharp on the defensive turn. And as we've both articulated, or we've all three of us articulated with Emerson Royale, he is better defending, you know, when he's looking ahead. But, you know, again, I wonder if there's a place there where, you know, his defensive nous, even compromised, is going to be better than what Porro doesn't know defensively. But then, of course, you want Porro's attacking nous. So it's one of the many areas of Ange Ball that is going to sort itself out. It's a fascinating, fascinating battle.
It is. I think Porro tracking back, I don't think he's particularly weak defensively. I think, you know, the weakness we've seen with him is predominantly around more dealing with crosses and not spotting runs in behind him, or, you know, runs in between him and his closest centre back. I do wonder, and I might be pinning too much hope on this, I do wonder whether Van de Ven will allow us to close down those balls in, so we don't have to deal with it because we cut them off at source. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's the answer to it. I do think that, you know, Porro tracking back, you know, chasing a player, there's not much, I don't think there's a huge amount of difference between Porro and Royale in terms of speed, but I don't think that's as much of an issue. I think where Porro's weak is defending, facing up the field. So they've got almost opposite skill sets.
It is definitely going to be a case of what contributes most to the positives of Ange Ball as opposed to the risks of Ange Ball. I think that's probably what's going to win out in the end. And it's probably the same all across the pitch, right? We're probably looking at all those players and all those battles. You know, who's going to give more?
Yeah, absolutely. Ange Ball? And my guess is that whenever Ange is faced with a choice between defend and attack, he's going to pick attack. He's going to pick the risky choice, which is why I think he'll end up with Porro.
Well, yeah. I mean, we will see. That is to be seen. I think he was smart today with the choices he made. And I do think that, you know, let's look at some of the other players who are adjusting to Ange Ball, and let's look at Yves Bissouma, shall we? Who actually, I would like to posit, it's my word of the pod, I'd like to posit this to you gentlemen, that actually this felt like Yves Bissouma's debut for Tottenham Hotspur Football Club.
Yeah.
This is the player that everyone told me we had signed. This is the player that I didn't see. And it's not his fault. Not his fault. Given a chance to play the way he plays, gentlemen.
I was thinking during the game. So Maddison, we wanted to sign last summer. Conte said no. Bissouma, we did sign last summer. Conte didn't like him. And then Skip and Sarr, two players again that Conte didn't fancy. So our midfield today, or, you know, kind of the four midfielders who played there today, were all players that Conte turned his nose up at.
Yeah, it's the anti-Conte midfield. Sorry, anti-Conte midfield. Did I mispronounce that?
Sorry. I did my Continio suggestion during the week. I did get someone suggesting me that we ought to call it the more cunts period.
Yeah,
it's remarkable when you look at that midfield, and you know they're all people that Conte didn't rate, didn't want to work with, didn't like. And I think also when you think we've got Bentancur to come back, and if he comes back and fit, oh, and you've got Bissouma, Bentancur, and Maddison, that's a really, really tasty midfield.
Yeah,
perhaps Sarr to come in when necessary himself, who is another player of the cathedral ceiling. I mean, crikey. You can see it. And poor old Skippy, who's really elevated his game. We never even mentioned him, but, you know, very, very useful. I mean...
Yeah, and Lo Celso...
Oh, wow, yeah, Lo Celso.
I'm saying Lo Celso had an excellent pre-season. So I think there's one thing, actually, with Romero going off when he did, and there was a cock-up with not registering it as a head injury. I think that probably denied either maybe Solomon or Lo Celso getting on the pitch today. Maybe not Lo Celso, because Sun had gone off and the armband had already been passed across once. But, yeah, maybe there was one less change that we might have seen because of that. Bissouma was great. Bissouma was absolutely fantastic. He'd be man of the match for me. He had everything. Yeah, he was physical. He you know, difficult to get past. His passing was very good. His ball carrying, it was almost Dembele-esque in occasions where he'd pick up the ball and just slalom.
He does everything.
Slalom through people.
Yeah, he does everything.
He looked happy. He looked happy. Yeah. He looked like he was enjoying his football.
Yeah,
he looked really unshackled, and that's one thing about Ange Ball that I was enjoying so much about this side. They all looked unshackled. Even Deki got over what I thought was some early match nerves and maybe a little bit of confidence, and even he was coming into it in the second half. They're all we have to remember the psychological number that is done to players when they're sort of told effectively to play against their instincts is big. And I don't know. I feel that Ange Ball is all about not reducing players, and I think we're adjusting to it very well.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Bissouma, you look at the kind of prices being talked about for Caicedo right now, 110 million, something like that, and it makes Bissouma look like an absolute bargain.
Yeah, it does indeed.
Do you know? Perhaps I'm just feeling like overwhelmingly positive because of what we were serving up previously, but I think we are adjusting so well to the new system. And on another day with our front three being a bit more potent, I think we could have run away with this. I thought I think his tactics are translating really positively already on the pitch. I think it'll be more of an indicator of how we are progressing, like when we play in our next game, you know, against Man U at home. But we've discussed with Ange before about, you know, like people have quoted as saying that he gets his ideas across very, very quickly. And you can see that already.
I mean, I think the beauty about playing Man United is there'll be more space for us. They're not going to close off the space between midfield 100%. And defence. So Maddison and Skip or Sarr, whoever gets picked in the right channel, will have more space to operate.
Yeah.
And I think also Man United are probably likely to push up and play a higher line, which gives Sun and Deki a bit more space to and Richarlison more space to run in behind as well. So I think it could suit us. And obviously they pose more of a threat at the other end. It might be one of those ones where this week's game or today's game was one of those opponents who just really, really don't suit us. And we did well.
I mean, look.
And we did well.
And we've said this before. There's going to be some roller coasters and rocket rides with Ange Ball. There's no doubt about that. You said something there, Rem. You said about I'm feeling overwhelmingly positive. And it's interesting. One of the things that I've been quite annoyed about actually over the last few years is that whenever we do feel positive, we are made to feel guilty for it, as if we're happy clappers. This is not happy fucking clapping. This is seeing your football team actually play like you want it to play. Bring it on.
I just want to make one more point. One thing that I really was such a difference as well was options. We had options everywhere. Whenever we had the ball, there was at least two passes on, regardless of how much space or little space we had. And that was so refreshing as well. The movement and the options and everyone pulling together. It was really, really good to see.
Yeah. I think we all would agree. I mean, we probably don't need to dwell on it. I think we'd all agree that Ange made the absolute right decision to sub Romero when he did. I think it was very clear after he'd scored that he was still dinged. And I just wanted to draw attention to it because a lot of managers would try and like leave that player on for another 10 or 15 minutes. And I thought it showed that he is a responsible manager who cares for his players. I thought it was the right thing to do.
He talked about it in the press conference afterwards where he said it was a decision by the medical team. So he said the medical team were monitoring as he progressed from there. And then he scored with his head. They were pretty sure that he needed, for his own benefit, to get him off. And obviously, what we know about head injuries, it's for me, it's not even an issue. We will always err on the side of caution. And he went on to say later on, we had another question, said, asked whether he'd be available for next week. So I don't know, mate. Well, well, exactly. That's where people like me should shut up and listen to the doctors. So that's what I'm going to do.
Jeez.
What a refreshing attitude.
Imagine Mourinho saying that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what was occurring to me at the time it happened, is that, you know, and we've got to stop talking about our former managers.
But, yeah, we do.
But I think, you know, some of our former managers wouldn't have allowed him to come off and would have left him out there.
No, we all thought the same. So I agree with you. We probably should cease mentioning them, but we did all think about it. what did you think of Brentford? Shit, actually. I what a reductive football side. I didn't enjoy them. I didn't enjoy their tactics. I didn't enjoy how they played. I've never really enjoyed how they played, and I'm getting bored of it. I mean, the first season I gave them a pass because they're a new team. I really wish they would do something a little different. That's if you want me to be brutally honest. So I am being, and I didn't enjoy them one single bit.
I don't think we learned anything new from them from last season. You know, they were a good test for us in our first game. They played that kind of counter-attacking football. I don't think they're in any danger of going down, you know, from what I can see. But yeah, you know, as Milo said earlier, it was like this is the sort of game where this is against a team we could struggle against. And I thought we overcame that pretty well. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to go and watch it week in, week out, but I think they do what they do very well. They're an incredibly well-drilled side. Their recruitment is excellent. And, you know, I mean, given the budget they're working within, you know, I think maybe they do get a pass for the style of football they play, because, you know, it's not, you know, you've got to kind of play to your strengths and you know, within, you know, with what you've got. And I think Frank's done a very good job with that. You know, I didn't like it when some of the press were linking with him with us in the summer, because it, you know, it's exactly what I don't want. Right. But you know, I kind of admire what they do in that they do it well. It's just, you know, it's not for me, but you know.
So closing thoughts, one positive and one negative in 30 seconds, 3, 2, 1, Milo.
Positive is, yeah, got off to a decent start. You know, I think we played very well. I think, you know, we're considering the amount of change we've gone through, we're coping with that well. The new players all look really good. A penalty and a deflected goal, you know, on another day, we walk away with 3 points there, which, you know, it's not an easy place to get that. The negative, I don't want to dwell on Royal again, so I won't do that. Maybe just the wide players, you know, Son and Deki not being able to get in behind, not being able to go both ways. It is an issue for us. It means that we don't get the best out of the system. And it's something for Ange to work on. And again, I don't think it's something that we can teach them to do or train them to do. They're just not suited to it. I'm not quite sure what the answer is.
My negative is we couldn't find the winner, and we tailed off towards the end. But my positive is everything else. We've got our Tottenham back.
Yep. I'll start with my negative, which is just, you know, those front three are, you know, they're going to take a little while to gel, I think, and find their way. If indeed they do find their way, that'll be, you know, that's the area of the pitch now that seems to need the most work chemically, but I think we'll get there. And like yourself, I mean, I was just delighted to have my football club back and to enjoy watching us have the ball for large periods of the match. What a wonderful thing, what a rarity, and what, you know, what promise for the season. Wherever it takes us, at least we will be entertained. So yeah. Okay, there was a friendly earlier in the week. We sent our B team out to play Barcelona. We'll keep it brief. Chaps, you know, just a brief overview of the game as you saw it.
I enjoyed it. I thought our second string were pretty much, you know, pretty dominant up until maybe the final 10 minutes. The Barca kids for me showed more than their first teamers. And we showed that we have a full squad on board with the new manager's tactics and system.
Yeah, I'd agree. That was fun. 80 minutes of it were fun. I thought we did pretty well on the whole. You know, in terms of kind of the negatives, I thought, you know, Reggie was really poor, you know, to blame for three of the goals at least. And I thought Dyer looked really, you know, out of sorts, you know, and didn't look like a good fit for the side. or for the tactics rather. So other than those two, I thought everyone was very good, and I was really enjoyed it. And Barca put out a full strength side. We sent our stiffs, and at times, from kind of 20 minutes, there's probably an hour of the game where we were, they looked quite struggling to cope with us. It was good fun. It was really good fun.
Yeah, I was harsh in calling it our B team, and maybe it's harsh to call them stiffs. There were some very good players out there, and the players that will have an important part to play for us. But what I thought was most instructive about the game is, once again, Ange definitively learned a few more of the names that he may already have known and not going to be part of his plans. But I think we saw definitively who those players are. And it's hard to see any role for Reggie. It's hard to see any role for Eric, as much as I love him. And I have to say, I wonder if Davies will hang in. I mean, I suppose he will, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't make the cut either. I'll be interested to see.
Well, there's no other left back. Unless we sign a left back, I think he's going to be around. And I think his versatility means that he's useful squad option. So I think he'll be fine. Yeah. It does look like Sanchez might have leapfrogged Dier in terms of kind of the fourth choice centre back option. Assuming we bring in another defender, and I think the Barca. Right. I think the Barca game, we're a bit like the Highlander. There can only be one, can't there? So out of Jaffet, Sanchez and Dier, only one can survive. And I think the Barca game, and probably today as well, suited him. He's always been a good recovery defender. He's good at tracking back and getting a tackle. His issues are normally when he's facing up the other way up the pitch. It suited him. I thought he did very well. And
he's a fine defender in a team that plays front foot football. We saw that with Poch, and I think we are seeing it in this system. And I think we would all agree that if it is Highlander, and I say this over my beloved Eric, I think it's quite right that he's leapfrogged, and I think it's quite right that he's there. And again, we didn't touch on him actually in the game today, but I thought he really acquitted himself very well, and good for him. I love to see a player come back from being buried by a bunch of ignorant wankers on the terraces. I love it. I love it. Every time it happens, it's great.
I mean, I think in both games, I thought today's, again, Sanchez in possession wasn't great, but we know that. We know that about him. And, in terms of, with the high line, tracking back, getting tackles in, he's really good at that. He's well suited to it. He's got the pace that the others haven't. Fine. I mean, effectively we're talking about kind of fourth choice defender here. So, they probably won't get a huge amount of minutes over the season. But he's proved himself really useful, and he did a great job today when he came on. There were stories late this afternoon linking Dier with a move to Saudi Arabia. It was a Saudi journalist who reported it. I don't know how true that was.
That would be a turn up for the books, I have to say.
But yeah, so I don't know. It's not a journal I'm familiar with, so I don't know how reliable this is. But
Well, it is the week that was, and we do like to share the love in this particular section of the pod. So who wants to kick off with the star item of the week that was? Which one are you? Highlander.
I'll pick this one up. Go on. So on Saturday, the club confirmed that Ange had appointed Sung Hyun Min as our new captain, with James Maddison and Christian Romero as our vice captains. What do you think of these appointments?
I think they were absolutely the correct appointments. I think making Sonny the captain was probably the obvious choice, but I wouldn't have been shocked to see Madders or Romero take the armband as well. So solid choices all round.
Outstanding choice. Really, I mean, it was suggested by a couple of people one person I know was saying that they didn't think Sonny was a good fit, and that maybe he was just picked, for a popularity vote, and because he didn't have the gumption for it, which was an astounding thing to say, because I can't think of a braver player than Sonny in our side. Some of the things he's had to go through, some of the adversity that he's played through. He played through a broken arm for 85 minutes at Aston Villa once, let us not forget. And then, of course, he did play for his career versus serving for the military. You can't get more responsible than that. What a great appointment. And those vice appointments, yes, I'm all on board. Absolutely. Yeah, tremendous. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know who said that, but there are morons, Steph. I mean, I'd cut them out. Delete them from your phone now. Get your phone out. Delete them from your phone. You don't need these people in your life. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't know bull.
He's a good lad, he is. But occasionally, I must say, we do
disagree. Doesn't know bull.
We do disagree on fundamentals. He might have been on a wind up. In fairness, it has to be said, he has been known to troll, and I'm an easy troll. You know that, so I'm easy to draw out of my cage.
I think Sonny, it's very clear when you see the players interacting how integral Son is in terms of kind of the camp and how he acts. I said a few weeks ago about when we won the Tiger Cup in after we played Lion City Sailors. And there was the ceremony for that. It was Rodon. He went round the back and put his arm around Rodon and gave him a squeeze. And, you know, this is a player who's right on the fringes of the team, you know, at that point. And it's him that Sonny's gone to talk to and engage with. I just think he's so good at that. And of course, you know, he's captain of his country, so it's not as if this is new to him. So
exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Did you see the video with the announcement, Ange?
Yeah, 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 and just he's a no nonsense individual, but in those moments, which could have actually been a bit cringe or contrived, he managed to do and say exactly the right things. And, you know, and again, like with the Romero situation, he just has this authority about him, but he's also, there's a care and there's a there's just a very good presence about him. And the whole, and then with Sonny coming up and accepting, and I believe Sonny didn't know that was going to happen.
That's right. Yeah. He in his interview that he did for Spurs Play, yeah, he said that was the first he'd heard of it.
Yeah, it was just a very genuine, very touching and, you know, an exciting moment.
I mean, I just find myself fighting hyper. No, I fight hyperbole most of the time anyway when it comes to things I love, this football club being a major part of that. I look at him, I listen to him, I see his presence in the club right now. And I think we were talking about this earlier in the week, weren't we, Milo? I was saying that... He's got a touch of the Fergies about him to me. That omnipotence, another big Scrabble word I'm pulling out this week. He feels omnipotent. And yeah, I think he's got that old school presence, but he's got, you know, new school, like, ideas. I mean, he plays football the way it should be played. So, yeah, I mean the love is growing.
There's similarities in terms of how he works with the team as well, in that he keeps his distance. He's got empowered coaches who do most of that kind of interaction with the players. Then he comes in.
Yeah,
I thought there were a couple of comments that I've seen from him this week about the dressing room, where he's been asked about that, and just said, you know, it's nothing to do with me. It's down to the players. It's their choice. And there was the huddle that the players are doing before the game.
Yeah, again,
he was asked about great that. Quote. I haven't got it in front of me, but the gist of it saying, yeah, it's nothing to do with me, mate. It's I've got enough on my plate. I've got enough on my plate without him to think of that kind of stuff, and saying it's down to the players. But I think it's also quite good that he's publicly giving credit to the players for stuff, or saying, I think it's a really interesting idea, saying, you know, the dressing room is your environment again, which is a big contrast to. I'm trying to remember which Italian international it was, said when Conte was Italy manager, none of the players wanted to sit by the door because they were going to get punched by Conte as he came in at half time. And like that kind of very, very, kind of kicking stuff around, all that kind of stuff. And Ange is basically saying, this is your space and you do with it as you want. Yeah. And I'm, it's nothing to do with me, which is very, very different to what we've seen before. So yeah, I thought the video was great and I'm really pleased with these appointments. I think the other thing is actually, you know, we were talking today about kind of the number of changes in the side. We talked about, Dier and Davis and others. The easy choice would have been to make Dier and Davis vice caps, because those are the kind of roles they've played before. Mm. But what I think he's done is he's drawn a line under those kind of previous periods. And actually, I think as a signifier, it feels quite similar to me again, a moment we talk about a lot when Poch, cut out Adebayor and Kabul and the others. And I mean, actually, Kabul was wearing the iron band at that time, wasn't he? So, similar. But it feels like he's drawn a line under the past and said, right, this is day one, and we move on from here.
Well, he made a very, very pointed note of saying that age and experience does not dictate leadership. I mean, that was one of the big things I took away from that video, is that you're never too young to be a leader in on the football pitch. And he actually broke it down even to that isolated points where he's saying, if you do something positive on the pitch, you're leading by example. So, look, we're all fully vested, and I've already gone hyperbolic with the Fergie comparison. So there's only one place we can go from here, and that is to talk about Joe Rodon. It's the only place to go after all that. Joe Rodon has joined Leeds United on loan for the 2023-24 season. And very simply, is this a good move for Joe? I think we all feel for him and feel that he deserves a good move. So, chaps, is it or isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good move for him. It's a big club. So it will be a very good move for him if he plays. So if he's, you know, playing and he's playing regularly for a team like Leeds, then, and you know, and he kind of sets his marker out, then yeah, fantastic move for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably a bit disappointed about having to drop down to the Championship, but I mean, I feel for Joe Roden because I think he's a decent player who joined the wrong club at the wrong time. And, you know, I think he's, you know, if he hadn't joined us and, you know, stayed at Swansea or, you know, moved to another club where, you know, he was going to get opportunities, then I think, you know, his career could be in a very, very different place now. And I feel sorry for him that he's got to kind of rebuild his career. But, you know, I think he's a good player. And, I hope he gets a chance to do that because, yeah, I like him.
Yeah, I mean, do you ever find yourselves when you look at a player like Roden? I've wondered this. I just wonder, what is it in his game that no coach trusts? Because to my naked eye, he doesn't seem any less vulnerable in any of the areas a defensive player needs to be strong than any of the other defenders we've been playing for the last few years. So you wonder, like, does he have a constant, like, little tiny brain fart? Is it something to do with the angles that he takes up that can't be coached out? I find myself wondering if it's details or if it is really just bad luck.
I think you know, Conte didn't want to give young players a chance. I think it's as simple as that in terms of, you know, when
point.
He joined us. And, you know, with a lot of our fans, you know, I don't know, you know, kind of everyone's talking about kind of Kim Min-jae and what's happened to him. And, you know, Mourinho's kind of rewritten history and tried to claim that he wanted to sign him, you know, from Turkey, when actually it was when he was in China that we were interested in him and when Mourinho was our manager. And, you know, if he had come in at that point, would Mourinho actually have given him any chances, or would Kim Min-jae be Joe Rodon, you know, the South Korean Joe Rodon now? Because, you know, promising defender coming from, you know, from a league that, you know, yeah, not from a major European league, doesn't get the opportunities as a result of that, and then, you know, suffers for, you know, for confidence, and then it all falls to pieces. So, you know, it could have been, you know, very easily been, you know, rather than him winning Serie A last season and, you know, joining Bayern Munich and, you know, all of this, it could be him who's getting shipped off to Leeds because we've had a load of managers who doesn't fancy them, and, you know, them's the breaks.
It could have been Joe Rodon winning Serie A and going off to Bayern Munich in another alternate universe. I like this. I like alternate universes. Ram, bring us to the alternate universe of the first trophy we're going to win this season, will you?
Yeah, let's talk about the League Cup. We've been drawn away to Fulham in the second round of the League Cup. The game will take place the week commencing 28th August. What do you think of the draw?
Yeah, it's all right. You know, we've avoided the really big clubs. I think, you know, you'd rather it was at home rather than away, but Fulham's all right. I didn't realise that the League Cup had North and South draws at this stage of the tournament. It's so long since we've been in it that at this stage that I didn't realise, that the second round was split. But there you go. You learn something new every day. Yeah, it's fine. You'd hope we'd be able to get past them, and hopefully it gives us a chance to play a couple of the fringe players. I don't know.
Yeah, always a good night out at the Cottage, isn't it? Great, great ground, always a good vibe. And I say smash them and continue on to our first trophy. I mean, you know, look, there's no good draw in the Cup. We all know that. It just really isn't. I mean,
I think Fulham overachieved a little bit last year. I think their underlying data doesn't look quite as good as their results. So my suspicion is that they won't do as well this year. Maybe it's not a bad time to be playing them.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's the easiest draw, like you guys said. You know, I would have preferred Sutton United, but it might be a bit difficult. But I think we'll go through, and I've got a good feeling about the League Cup.
Transfer rumours. Shall I continue?
Yes, please.
Okay, I will continue then. A name that has been getting more heavily linked in our search for new centre backs, gentlemen, is Torino's Per Schuurs. Per is 23. He joined Torino from Ajax last summer and has 17 caps, the Dutch under-21s. I'm going to wave my flag of ignorance here and say I really know very little about the player. I'm going to assume that Milo does know more about the player than I do. So, you know, and Ram, I have absolutely no idea. You might be the leader of the Per Schuurs fan club. So
he's pretty good. I mean, Torino aren't, stylistically are very different to how we're playing. So if you look at his data for last year, the possession, the ball stats don't look great because that's the way they play. So it's probably best not to read that into them. Yeah, I think he's a decent player. You know, effectively, we're looking for a third choice centre back who can play both left centre back and right centre back. That's the brief. And all of the ones we've looked at so far have been, you know, pretty good general all round centre backs. They're not stars on the whole, but you know, a useful, steady player who can come in and play both those positions. He fits that. I don't know whether you noticed, Steph, we were tweeted about this with the song suggestions, and someone suggested that we could sing Under Under Pressure's.
Under pressures, do 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 do. Ram, you want to join us for that? We're under pressures, do
do do do do do do do do do. So I think that'd be quite. You know, crunching tackle goes in. You're under pressures.
Yeah. It's good. I'll be honest. Suggested I was, that.
I was disengaged there because I was just googling him.
Ben Minot. Ben Minot. And
Minot, you win this week's song award. Please keep them coming, because Milo says week after week he doesn't want any more. It isn't in the notes. He hadn't written it in. I hadn't even posited a song this week, and there he was, straight in there. So keep him coming. Keep him happy. I'll just join in.
It's got to stop. Last Tuesday night, my brother phoned me when he was driving home from work. He'd been listening to the pod, and he phoned me up with requests. He thinks it's fucking commercial radio. I was like,
oh, very good. I'm glad to hear that that this is catching. I'm glad. Good. Well, for that reason alone, I'd love to see him play for us. What sort of, like, you know, surface supporter am I? But anyway, I will probably be doing the Google search like yourself, Ram, and the YouTube scouting, and let's see if he joins. I presume. Little question. Sorry.
You might be better off looking at Ajax, where it might be a more of a stylistic fit to what we're doing. So maybe go for some earlier ones. But yeah, he's all right.
That's good advice. I presume, gents, that we're all in agreement that the tap sober dance is over. The tap dance is over. I suppose I could reduce that to. Is that right? Do you believe, or do you think he might sneak in the door at the end? Do you think we're planning a late raid?
I don't think it would be a good idea. I mean, I think he's a great player. I think he's really, really good. But then what you're doing is stifling Van de Ven's development, because he'd start over Van de Ven because he's better. And I don't see the point in spending, you know, 950 million quid on a defender and then signing someone to play over them and stifling their development. So I think I think this approach of signing a kind of generalist third choice is probably the right one. And you know, I've heard people say, "Oh, well, Van de Ven can play at left back." Well, then we're stifling Udogie, who is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, why would we want to do that? Yeah. So yeah, I think. Yeah,
it makes logical sense.
The sums being talked about for Tapsoba were, you know, kind of 60 million plus. He's really good, and I'm sure he'll get a move to a big club very soon. But we probably need to spend that money elsewhere.
Quick question, and he's not in our notes, and I know we mentioned him last week, but he is being mentioned again. I just want to ask both of you while we're here about what your thoughts are on Gift Orban. I have done the YouTube tour of him. He's very exciting. He's electric. I do question whether we can accommodate as forward who is not an aerial striker, so to speak, or isn't maybe as good in the air. But my word, there's no doubt you put him in the penalty box, and it looks like if his skill set translates, he would be like an electric modern Defoe type forward, right? I mean, the rumours are that we're going to make this deal happen. Yeah, that's what I hear. The flirtation has started quite heavily, and it feels like one of those deadline day deals that Daniel loves to do.
I don't think it'll be left that late. I mean, Ange has been quite clear that our priority at the moment is to get players out the door, which, you know, we've got at least 10 players to sell or loan out. So there's a lot of business, a lot of work to be done. As I said last weekend, you know, I think there's a few deals where it looks like we've done the groundwork and lined them up already. Once we get the players out, then I think they'll happen. But, you know, we're not going to, you know, we've got what, 37 players, something like that at the moment, 37, 38 players. The most we can register is 25, but we can only register 17 foreign, non-homegrown players. We've got a lot of players to shift. So I think... Yeah, I think it might be that doesn't happen for a couple of weeks. But when we were talking earlier on about the bench and the lack of a replacement for Richarlison, that was who I was thinking. If you've got 20 minutes left and you want to change things up a bit, then bringing someone like that on would make a real difference. I think he's a really exciting player, and as I said before, his backstory is fascinating.
Yeah, I don't have anything further to add to what you guys have said.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's a great story. And, you know, look, in the notes it says here season preview. I feel we've somewhat been previewing the season as we've been going along here. I don't know if you chaps agree. So I was going to sort of reduce this to a couple of key questions. But I think, you know, I'm interested for both of you what you think our target for the season should be.
I think European football and a good run in the cups. I think that's the target.
I mean, I think our target should be the same as every year. I think our target should be top four. The very least we should be looking to have European football next year. I think it's going to be a really tough year. I think it's the league, I think it's very, very competitive. I think, you know, a lot of clubs have strengthened. And there's a lot of unknowns. You know, I think if you watched the Chelsea Liverpool game earlier on this afternoon, they both brought in a lot of players. It's very difficult to know what those sides are going to be like because there's still kind of gaping holes in those teams, and you don't know quite how they're going to settle and develop. Both of them could do quite well. Both of them, you know, might not. I don't know. I mean, I suppose you might even put us into that category as well, in that, you know, maybe we haven't spent quite as much money as some of those teams yet, but there's been a lot of changes. And Manchester United, I think, have bought very well. Arsenal have, brought in, spent a lot of money this summer. Man City look like they're, strengthening as well. It's difficult, and then that kind of tier below that, which I suppose you put us in as well, Newcastle, Villa, Brighton. Brighton. It's tough. And, any of those clubs with a good run could end up in the top four. And there's going to be some very good teams who don't get European football just because the quality at the top.
Yeah, I agree. I am being cautious, and that's why I'm saying, our target should be European football and a good run in the cups. But I think if I was to really let my heart go, I think we could be a bit of a. I think we're being a bit under the radar, which is a good thing. Because I think people think we are a club in transition, and there is a, Harry's gone and all these sort of things. But I think we could pull out a bit of a surprise this season.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels so similar to Poch's first full season. Everything about us feels similar to that. It really does. And I mean, look, our target should always be top four. It should always be Champions League. If it's any less, then we're not behaving properly. Truthfully, our target should be winning the league. But of course, that's a whole other discussion that the Premier League are going to have to dive into one day and sort out. Not sort it out for us to win, but, the way football works. I think our chances of achieving top four, Milo said it. I think, Ram, you said it. I mean, you can't predict that. There's so much strength in the Premiership. I'd say 50-50 at best. It's not my personal belief is we will not finish top four. But I do think we're going to win a trophy, and I will predict which trophy that is in a moment. But I do feel we will. I think this is the year. I think one of those scripted things, isn't it? He goes because he wants to win trophies, and we'll win one the first season he's not here.
I've got that in my notes. It's written in the stars now that he's gone.
I mean, I think in terms of the league, I think everyone's kind of jostling for position to be best place when Pep leaves City. Basically, I think it's hard to see anyone beating them to the title. But sometime soon, there's going to be a big upheaval there, and everyone basically needs to be have a squad ready to compete when that happens, and then have a bit of luck. And maybe we've left it a little bit late to be a contender in that. I don't know. It depends on when it happens, I suppose. If he does another couple of seasons at City, then we might be well placed for that. But that's what it feels like to me. Do you want me to go through our predictions, Steph, what everyone said?
I think you should. I think this is an area where you love this area, because you love to remember it and then throw it back at us at the end of the season.
I've just turned off accepting responses on the Google form for this. You can't go in and change them now. Right. So first up, Amar, he thinks that we're going to finish. So Spurs will finish fifth in the Premier League. I think the next one, actually, I might as well just say now, we all said that we think that City will win the Premier League. There's two here where everyone agrees. He thinks that Spurs will win the FA Cup, that Spurs will win the League Cup. Wow. Ooh. That Real Madrid will win the Champions League. The relegated clubs will be Bournemouth, Luton and Sheffield United. And that Haaland will be the Premier League's top goal scorer. We all think that City will win the league and Haaland will be top scorer. So I might just skip over those as we go through the others.
Our crystal balls are wonderful.
Gareth.
Aligned.
So where do we think Gareth... Where do you think Gareth thinks we're going to finish?
12th.
Gareth, we love you, and we hope you're enjoying your time in Florida. We love 16th, you, mate. But yeah. We love you. You are the ballast of common sense. So we love you. You keep us grounded, mate. But
7th, he thinks.
Oh, blimey, vertigo.
He thinks that Arsenal win the FA Cup, that Chelsea will win the League Cup. Arsenal and Chelsea. Bayern Munich will win the Champions League.
Oh, no.
And he's relegating Burnley, Wolves and Luton. I think it's me next. I think we'll finish 5th. City for the title. City for the FA Cup. City for the League Cup.
Oh, wow.
Real Madrid for Champions League. And I'm relegating Luton, Sheffield United and Wolves. Hang on a sec. And next up is you, Ram. You think we'll finish 6th, City for the title, Liverpool for the FA Cup, Spurs for the League Cup, Bayern Munich for the Champions League, Burnley, Luton and West Ham, you're relegating, and obviously Haaland. Right, it's Steph now. Steph, you got us finishing 6th, you got City winning the league, you got Spurs winning the FA Cup, you got Chelsea winning the League Cup, Real Madrid winning the Champions League, and you're relegating Everton, Wolves and Sheffield United. You're the only person who thinks that Luton will stay up.
No, my caveat for that is that Kevin North, who is one of my very, very closest friends, is a giant Luton Town supporter and listens to our pod regularly and has been a regular supporter of it. And so I would never dream to speak against the town on a moral basis. So that's my main reason. Plus, I hope they make it.
I think Luton won't be too bothered about going down. I think they're ahead of schedule getting into the Premier League.
Oh, Kev will doubtless tell me that when he listens to this pod. He'll be like, don't worry about me, mate.
And I think their model's going to be a little bit like Norwich are when they come up. It's like, kind of take the money, go down, spend it, build a better squad, and then be better next time they come up. That's my guess.
Mm. Fantastic story, nonetheless. Really is. Love it.
And Ricky's last. So Ricky thinks that we'll finish 6th, City will win the title, City will win the FA Cup, Newcastle will win the League Cup, City will win the Champions League, and he's relegating Wolves, Luton and Sheffield United, same as me. And yeah, Haaland for the title. I asked some slightly different questions of our listeners, if you'd like to know what they said. So you can have a bash at these as well.
I did already. I've already been in.
You've been in the voted, have you? Right.
I have. I've probably ruined it for everyone.
So I said, well, we finished. So 15% of our listeners think, or our Twitter followers rather, think that we'll finish in the top 4. 63% think we'll finish 5th to 7th. 19% think 8th to 12th. And 2% 13th or lower. Top scorer, 56% think Sonny, 29% think Richie, 2% think Madders, 14% think someone else. Player of the season, 18% Son, 5% Benton Kerr, 54% Madison, and 23% someone else. And I think something else's were quite good, actually. So Udogi, Basuma were the other kind of suggestions there. And finally, which of the new signings do they think will have the best season? Who do you think are the new signings will have the best season?
Madison.
So we've got there 89% of our Twitter followers agree.
You have to say it's unfair on Udogi because Udogi's coming into this league from nowhere and he looks like he's going to be smashing too. What a lovely position to be in. New signings jostling to be the best because they're going to have smashing season.
Yeah. I think Madison will take it as well because regardless of play, I think the people will look at, and you know, as I would as well, the goals and assists record as well. And I think that'll sort of swing it in his favour over anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there we are. We're the first pod of the new season and the new era and the first pod of In With The New, I suppose we'd say, right? I mean, that's kind of what we have to say. It's fun. It's fun. And I would encourage anyone who is on the fence of getting in and enjoying Tottenham Hotspur Football Club right now, you know, some people for whatever reason are hesitant to do that. Just move forward. We need you. Move forward. Enjoy the football club. Okay. They're your club. They're our club. Let's have fun with them. Thanks very much, chaps.
Cheers, Steph.
Good one, that. Yeah, cheers, it was Steph. Good. Look, thanks for joining us, folks. You know, we're going to be back next week. We're talking about our game against Manchester United. You will be with us. We look forward to it. Thank you. See you next week.